There had been a time in Smoke's past when he had sold all his cattle and switched over to raising horses. That had worked well for a while because the U.S. Cavalry had provided a willing market for his stock. But with the increase in demand for beef in the East, Smoke was once more raising cattle. His ranch was the biggest in Colorado, on par with some of the largest ranches in Texas. Although many ranchers were using Mr. Joseph Glidden's invention as a means of keeping their herds corralled, Smoke did not believe in barbed wire, or bobbed wire, as Pearly Cow and most of his hands called it. So he let his animals run free upon the range. That freedom gave him a lot of room to roam. Sugarloaf consisted of 50,000 acres of titled land with an additional 100,000 acres of adjacent free-range land. There was ample water and grass, and ultimately the herd was fenced in by nature with the Elk Mountain Range to the north and Grand Mesa to the west. With over 15,000 head of cattle scattered over 150,000 acres, rounding them up would be quite an undertaking. In fact, it was a job much too large for his full-time hands. Several additional hands had been hired for the roundup, and the operation was well underway. The first thing was to find all the cattle carrying the Sugarloaf brand and move them into a herd. In addition, the cowboys would also have to bring in the unbranded calves that belonged to Sugarloaf. It was fairly easy to identify the calves that belonged to Sugarloaf, not only because much of the land was part of the Sugarloaf spread, but also because the newly born and unbranded calves tended to stay with their mothers, and their mothers were branded. Gradually, the far-ranging cattle were brought in and the herd grew in size. Not more than two or three riders at a time would work the assembled cattle. Too many riders cutting in and out of the herd would get the stock to milling around nervously, making them difficult to work with. Smoke was sitting in his saddle with one leg curled around the saddle horn. Pearly came riding up.
What did we do? Give the heifer some wine or play a little music for him?
What are you talking about?
We got more calves this year than ever before. Our bulls must have been quite the ladies' man.
I guess that explains why I saw one of them with an ascot and a monocle.
How many head are we going to take to the market this year?
I told the railroad people we would need at least 100 cars.
4,000 head at $40 a head, that would be...
$160,000.
Wow. Damn, Smoke, you must be about the richest man in Colorado.
I am, but it doesn't have anything to do with the money.
Well, I don't understand.
Sure you do. I'm the richest man in Colorado because I have Sally as my wife, and you, Cal, Monty, Lewis, and all my other friends. I wouldn't trade this place for all the money in the U.S. Treasury.
Hey, when we gonna eat?
Cal rode up to join him.
How come the chuck wagon ain't here yet?
Sally's fixing our meal today. You know how she likes to take a little extra time with her cooking.
Well, if Sally's cooking the meal, it's worth a little delay.
It won't be a long delay. There she comes now.
The three men looked back toward the big house and saw a chuck wagon coming toward them through the emerald green fields. Smoke rode out to meet her while Pearly started toward the cowboys who were working the herd, calling them in for the meal. Sally had gone all out with a large rump of roast beef, boiled potatoes, freshly baked bread, and apple pie.
What are you doing, Sally? Don't give them this much. You'll spoil them. They'll think they have to eat like this every day. Just give them some beans.
Sally reached back into the chuck wagon and picked up a can of beans. She tossed it to Smoke.
If you want beans, you eat beans. But I'm doing the cooking today, and I cooked a roast beef. This is what I'm serving.
Smoke and Sally sat on the ground, leaning back against the wheel of the chuck wagon.
I'm going into Gothic tomorrow. I wrote to Tamara and told her I would be there. I'll probably stay for a week or so while she's getting a new restaurant set up.
All right.
I hope you don't mind. I'm taking Cal with me. He will come in handy when we start moving in the stoves, tables, and such.
I don't mind at all. As a matter of fact, I think it's probably a good idea.
Toom's trading post was 10 miles from the nearest town, but it was surviving despite its isolation. It was located on the banks of the Grand River, which was the source of the Colorado River. Its location assured that many travelers came by. Seeing a store, hotel, restaurant, and saloon in the middle of nowhere made it one popular stop. Its remote location also meant it was a long way from a sheriff's protection. And that was the reason the Slater brothers, Frank and Travis, chose to rob it. Standing in the store with the bottom half of their faces covered by bandanas, they held their guns on Eli and Marcy Toombs, the proprietors. Also present in the store was Clem Perkins, an old man who had been in Colorado for over 50 years, one of the early mountain men. Eli Toombs took all the cash from his cash drawer and dropped it into the cloth bag Travis had handed him. He didn't resist. The two brothers had threatened to kill his wife if he did.
Ah, thank you very much for that contribution, Mr. Toombs.
Travis took the bag of money, then looked over toward the old mountain man.
What have you got that we might want?
I ain't got a damn thing, sonny.
Maybe I should just see about that.
Travis reached toward Clem Perkins. The old mountain man grabbed his hand, raised it to his mouth, and bit the end of his finger off.
Let's go! Let's get out of here!
Grabbing a shirt that was for sale on one of the tables, Travis wrapped it around the end of his finger to staunch the flow of blood. Taking advantage of the distraction, Toombs grabbed a shotgun from under the counter, but Frank saw him, and before Toombs could bring his weapon to bear, Frank shot him. When Mrs. Toombs grabbed the gun from her husband's dead hands, Frank shot her as well. A moment later, they rode away from the store with a bag that contained $49.57. Behind them lay the gruesome remains of their visit, the bodies of Mr. and Mrs. Toombs, and that of one of Colorado's earliest pioneers. Risco, Colorado. Risco was a scattering of fly-blown, crumbling adobe buildings laid out around a dusty plaza. What made the town attractive to people like Bill Dinkins, John Putnam, and Cole Parnell was its reputation as a robber's roost or outlaw heaven. The town was neither incorporated nor listed on any map. It had no city government of any kind, including no mayor, constable, marshal, or sheriff. Visitations by law officers were strongly discouraged, and there was a place in the town cemetery prominently marked Lawman's Plot. Two deputy sheriffs, one deputy U.S. marshal, and a private detective, all unwelcome visitors to the town, lay buried there. Dinkins, Putnam, and Parnell were in the Purgatory Saloon. The three horses they had stolen from the Canyon City livery were tied up out front. Because of the lawlessness of the town, they had absolutely no concern about riding stolen horses. It was certain nobody in town was going to challenge them over it. Parnell recognized Frank and Travis Slater when they came in.
Well, well. Last time I saw them two boys, we was in jail together back in Elko. Went to prison from there, never did find out what happened to them.
What was they in jail for?
Stealing, as I recollect.
We need a couple more men to make sure we pull off the job I have in mind. Do you think they would be the men for it?
Don't know whether they would be or not. Don't know them that well. If I was just guessing, I'd say they'd be all right.
Why don't you go and invite them over?
All right.
Parnell finished his drink, then walked over to the two brothers.
Frank and Travis Slater.
Both men whirled toward him with their hands covering the butts of their guns.
Hold it, hold it. You ain't gonna throw down on an old pard, are you?
Parnell, I thought you was in prison.
I was, but I got let out. Guess you boys was let out too, seeing as the last time I seen the two of you, you was in jail. Come on over. Got some fellas I'd like for you to meet.
Frank and Travis followed Parnell over to the table where Dinkins and Putnam were sitting.
Bill, Johnny, these two boys is old friends of mine. Like I told you, we was in jail together back in Elko.
Pull up a chair and join us.
The two brothers sat down.
Before I go any further, I need to ask a question. Which side of the law are you boys on? What I mean is, are there any wanted posters out on you?
There ain't no Dodgers out on us, because we ain't done nothing to be wanted for.
Well then, in that case, you probably wouldn't be interested in my proposal. Because what I have to suggest will put you on the wrong side of the law for sure. So if you've got enough money that you ain't interested, well, go on back up to the bar and finish your drink.
Now wait a minute, what is it that you have to suggest?
Nothing that would interest you two, I'm sure. I mean, being as you ain't never done nothing to be wanted for.
Supposing we had.
But your brother just said that you hadn't.
Now whenever a person does something wrong, why he don't gently go around telling everyone about it, that's why Travis lied like he done.
So what you're saying is, you wouldn't be against doing something wrong if it made you some money.
Now, how much money?
A lot of money.
Where are you going to find a lot of money?
Well, now, where do people keep a lot of money?
Frank and Travis looked at each other, then smiled.
A bank. You're talking about a bank, ain't you?
That's where the money is. You boys interested?
Oh, damn right we're interested. Now, when do we do it?
Soon.
It was 4 hours by buckboard from Sugarloaf to Gothic. When Sally and Cal left before dawn, there was quite a chill in the air. Their breathing and the breathing of the horses emitted little clouds of vapor, but the buffalo robes and sheepskin coats kept them comfortable. It had been Sally's decision to go by buckboard instead of Surrey. She was sure once they started setting up the restaurant, they would need some means of hauling freight around. During their drive over from Big Rock, it had warmed up considerably, so they shed their coats and put them in the back, alongside Sally's suitcase and Cal's duffel. They kept the conversation light as they traveled, and the time passed quickly. The little town of Gothic had grown up in the north part of Gunnison County. It was surrounded by mountains and supported by a productive silver mine, but inexplicably bypassed by the railroad. To Sally and Cal, approaching from the south, the collection of sun-bleached and weather-worn wooden buildings were so much a part of the land that it looked almost as if the town was the result of some natural phenomenon rather than the work of man. Crossing the outer edge of the town, they encountered a sign erected by the Gothic City Council. Gothic, population 507, silver capital of Colorado. Sally gave Cal a $20 bill.
What's this for, Miss Sally?
You'll need a place to stay while you're here. This is for your hotel and food.
Well, I don't think it'll cost that much.
Well, then you'll have a little extra money left over for a beer, or perhaps a game of cards. That is, if you don't gamble too recklessly.
Gee, thanks. Don't worry none about the gambling part. I don't never get carried away too much.
Sally had never been to Tamara's house, but she had the address, so she guided Cal to a very small structure that sat on the outskirts of town. Tamara had been watching for him, and she came out front, smiling broadly as they drove up. Sally hopped down, and the two women embraced. Then Sally reached for her suitcase.
I'll get that for you, Miss Sally.
Don't be silly. I'm not helpless. Go get yourself a hotel room, then find a place to park the buckboard and stable the horse.
Oh, the hotel has its own stable and wagon yard. You won't have any trouble.
Well, thanks.
I knew you would be here about lunchtime, so I prepared lunch for us.
They went into Tamara's house, redolent with the most enticing aromas.
Oh, we should have held Cal here.
I'm sorry, we should have, shouldn't we? Oh, but I have to confess, I never even thought about that. I'm afraid I made just enough for the two of us.
Although the house consisted of only one room and was very small, the table had been covered with a white cloth and was set with sparkling china, silver, and crystal.
Oh, if you set a table like this in your restaurant, you'll be drawing people from 50 miles in each direction. It is beautiful.
Thank you, but the presentation is only half of it. We'll have to see how it tastes.
Oh, let's do that right now.
Half an hour later, Sally dabbed at her lips with the napkin. She'd eaten crispy fried asparagus, French onion soup with a toasted baguette, and a bacon and tomato sandwich with peppercorn mayonnaise.
Oh, my. Oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. Once you get your restaurant going over here, you will have to open another one in Big Rock.
But wouldn't that upset Mr. Longmont? I know he prides himself on his restaurant.
And rightly so, because it is a fine restaurant. But Lewis is a gentleman and a connoisseur. Believe me, nobody will have a greater appreciation for another fine restaurant than Lewis Longmont. In fact, I would not be in the least bit surprised if he turned out to be one of your best customers.
Would you like to see the building I've picked out for the restaurant?
Oh, I would love to.
Do I need a coat, or has it warmed up enough?
The buffalo robes and the sheepskin coat felt good on the way over here, but it has warmed up considerably. However, I think it's still cool enough that you could use a light wrap.
A few minutes later, the two women were walking down the boardwalk toward the building where Tamara intended to put her restaurant. It fronted Gothic Road, which was the main street of the town, and was well-centered in the business community. The building had already been painted white and was obviously of recent construction. The door was locked, but Tamara had the key.
Mr. Cassidy gave me the key to the building. He built it for his bakery, but decided to add on to his house and put his bakery there instead. He has offered me a very good price on the building.
Once inside, Tamara showed where she would put all the tables and the cashier's counter.
As you can see, the kitchen already has a built-in oven. Mr. Cassidy was going to bake bread there. I'll use it for pies, and I'll buy bread from him. It was part of the agreement to sell the building to me.
They spent half an hour in the building, making plans for curtains, what color to paint the walls, the type of tablecloths that should be used, what pictures Tamara would want to put on the wall.
I've made some drawings of what I think it should be, if you would like to see them. They're back at the house.
They returned to Tamara's house and spent the rest of the day looking at drawings and at swaths of material.
I'm getting as excited about it as if I were the one doing it.
Well, in a very real sense, you are the one doing it. You will be my full partner.
No, I'll be only a minor partner. You are the one who'll be doing all the work. Though I think I would love to come over here and help you decorate and get everything started.
I've never had such a friend as you.
As soon as the bake opens tomorrow, we'll go and make all the financial arrangements.
Early the next morning, Bill Dinkins, John Putnam, Cole Parnell, and Frank and Travis Slater were camped in the shadow of Castle Peak, having a breakfast of coffee and jerky. Though it was late spring, the sun had not yet peaked over the mountain. At that elevation, at that time of year, it was still quite cool, if not downright cold. And the men were huddled around the fire, reluctant to give up its warmth.
How much money you reckon's in the bank?
A lot. How can there be all that much? I mean, being as the town's so little and all.
Gothic is a silver mining town. They keep a lot of money in their bank so they can handle the silver.
Hope it pays better than the last bank I hit. Last bank I robbed, I come up with only $76 and 5 years in prison. What are you laughing at? You was right there in prison with me.
Yeah, but it wasn't for no $76. I got more money than that.
How much you get, Putnam?
It got me $107.
I guarantee you there's more than $76 or even $107 in this bank. And I don't plan on going to prison.
In the town of Gothic, Sally, Tamara, and Cal were having breakfast in the dining room of the Silver Lode Hotel.
Ms. McKenzie, when you get your own restaurant started, well, we can eat with you whenever we come over.
Yes, indeed. And you can eat as my guest. There will be no charge.
Oh, you might want to rethink that, Tamara. You don't have any idea how much food Calvin Woods can pack away.
Oh, I think I will be able to manage it.
Miss Sally, are you going to teach Miss McKenzie how to make bear claws?
Tamara is quite a good cook. I'm sure she needs no instruction from me.
Maybe so, but I don't think anybody can make bear claws as good as you do.
Cal, the way you and Pearlie eat bear claws, I don't think it would make any difference to either one of you who made them.
I don't know. Yours is awfully good.
Very good.
Very good.
Oh, no, I was referring to the fact that you corrected yourself from is to are. That was very good.
Thanks.
Sally, what time is it?
Sally had a small watch pinned to the bodice of her dress, and she pulled it away on a little retracting chain to examine the face.
It lacks 15 minutes to 9. The bank opens at 9. If you don't mind, I would like to get there just as soon as the bank is open.
That's fine by me. The quicker we can get the business done at the bank, the quicker we can get started on putting the restaurant together.
Good. I'm glad you see it that way, too.
You gonna meet me in the bank?
Yes.
If you don't mind, I mean, with you and Miss McKenzie talking business and all, I'll probably just sort of wait over at the mercantile store.
I don't mind at all.
Hey, you reckon Pearly would like one of those things you poke the ends of your bandana through? So as you can slide it up and hold the bandana around your neck?
I think he would be very pleased with it.
Then I aim to get him one.
Travis Slater, the youngest of the five men, slipped his canteen off the saddle horn and took a drink, wiped the back of his hand across his mouth, then recorked it and hung it back on his saddle. He looked at his hand and the stub of his ring finger, healed now, from having been bitten off. He was still angry about that. He had killed the son of a bitch who did it, but he wished he was alive just so he could kill him again.
Damn, we've been 2 weeks without seeing a town. Don't you think maybe we could stop at a saloon and get us a few beers before we take care of our business?
Now, that would make a lot of sense, wouldn't it, Travis? Yeah, why don't we just go into the saloon, have us a few drinks, and strike up a conversation with some of the locals? That way, they're sure to have a good description of us. No, I got a better idea. Why don't we see if there's one of them picture parlors in town? We could have the photographer take our pictures, and there wouldn't be no doubt as to what we look like.
Hell, Bill, you don't have to get so particular about it. I was just saying that a beer would be good is all.
How are we gonna keep from getting recognized anyhow, once we rob the bank?
They ain't going to recognize us if we do this job right, Putnam. If all of you do just like I tell you, we'll be into that bank, have the money, and be out again before anyone in this town even knows what hit them. Then, when we ride into the next town, we'll be able to come in like we own the place. All the beer we can drink, women, gambling, money. Hell, we'll be king of the roost.
Have any of you ever known anyone to get himself two whores at the same time?
Two whores? What the hell would you do with two whores at the same time? Hell, Travis, I'm not sure you'd even know what to do with one whore. You ain't never even been with a whore yet, have you?
Well, I sure have. Lots of times.
Where'd you have a whore?
I had me one once when I was in Denver.
One time in Denver. Yeah, it sounds like lots of times.
That's only just because I never have enough money for whores.
Well, you just do what I tell you to today, and you'll have all the money you need. Even enough for two whores at the same time, if you think you can handle that. Now, let's get on with it. You both check your pistols.
The men pulled their pistols and checked the cylinders to see that all the chambers were properly charged. Then, they slipped their guns back into their holster.
Ready?
I'm ready.
When Tamara and Sally went into the bank, they walked over to one side where a low rail separated the lobby from a small office. The owner of the bank, a man named Kurt Flowers, was sitting at a desk. He was tall and distinguished looking, with silver hair, blue eyes, and a silver Van Dyke beard.
Mr. Flowers, I wonder if we could speak with you for a moment.
Of course you can. What can I do for you?
This is my friend, Sally Jensen. You may know of her husband, Smoke Jensen.
Oh, indeed I do know of him. Tell me, Mrs. Jensen, what brings you to our fair city?
Business. Tamara intends to start a new restaurant here, and I want to help her.
A new restaurant? What a wonderful idea. Of course, the Silver Lode Hotel will probably not welcome it, at least not initially, as it will be competition for their restaurant. But they'll come around to it. Any new business helps the town grow and maintain a level of prosperity, and that accrues to the benefit of us all. Where do you plan to put your restaurant?
I intend to buy the building Mr. Cassidy built. You know, the one that was going to be used for a bakery? He decided to enlarge his house and put the bakery there instead.
Ah, yes. I'm sure under the circumstances you will get a very good price on the building.
Tell me, Mr. Flowers, you have your fingers on the pulse of business in this town. Do you think $2,000 will be enough to buy the building, equipment, and get the restaurant started?
Yes, ma'am, I think $2,000 would be more than enough money.
I have $2,000 in cash. I would like to open an account for the restaurant and fill out whatever paperwork is necessary for Tamara to be able to access the account.
Yes, ma'am, Mrs. Jensen, we can open an account for Mrs. McKenzie right now. How is Mr. Jensen doing? I haven't seen him in a while.
He's doing fine, thank you. He's back at Sugarloaf, taking care of things. We are right in the middle of the spring roundup.
Sugarloaf is a fine ranch. In fact, it's as fine a ranch as there is in all of Colorado.
Thank you. We certainly like it.
Half an hour earlier, Dinkums, Putnam, Parnell, Frank, and Travis separated about a half mile outside of town.
I'll go in first, alone. Johnny, you and Cole come in a couple minutes later, from the north end of town. Frank, you and Travis come in from the south end. That way we won't be arousing any suspicion.
And where will we meet up?
In front of the bank.
Now won't that cause some suspicion?
By that time, it'll be too late for him to do anything about it. Bank opens at 9. I think it lacks about 20 minutes of 9 now. I'd like to get there as soon after it opens as we can. Johnny, you get the rest of you started on time.
All right. We'll be there on time.
Sally, Tamara, Kurt Flowers, and Bert Martin, the bank teller, were the only people in the bank when Dinkins and the others went in. Because of the masks on their face and the guns in their hands, everyone in the bank knew immediately what was going on.
You three! Get your hands up! Stay back there against the wall! If I see any one of you move, I'll shoot!
The three complied with the orders. Cole Parnell hopped over the railing to go behind the teller cage, then held his sack out toward the teller.
Put all your money into the sack.
Trembling, the teller emptied his cash drawer.
Hey, Dinkins, there ain't that much here.
Parnell, you dumb son of a bitch, you just give him my name! Get the rest of the safe!
I can't open the safe till 10 o'clock!
What the hell do you mean you can't open the safe till 10 o'clock? You work here, don't you?
Yes, but there's a time lock on the safe. It can't be opened till 10 o'clock!
Dinkins stepped up to the teller, put the muzzle of his pistol 1 inch from the teller's head.
Open the damn safe or I'll blow your brains out.
Please, he's telling the truth.
Who the hell are you?
My name is Kurt Flowers. I own this bank.
You own it, do you?
Yes.
Then I'm pointing my gun at the wrong man. You open the safe.
I can't open the safe. Mr. Martin is telling the truth. There is a time lock on it. Nobody can open it until 10 o'clock.
Why the hell would you do something like that?
Isn't it obvious, Mr. Dinkins? It's to keep polecats like you from being able to rob the bank.
Dinkins saw the money in Sally's hands and he smiled.
Well now, if I can't rob the bank, I'll just rob you. Hand the money over, Missy.
If you want it, you'll grab around on the floor for it, like the rat that you are.
Surprising Dinkins, Sally threw the money up in the air. 100 individual $20 bills. They fluttered down, scattering all over the floor.
You bitch!
Sally grabbed her stomach where the bullet hit. Blood oozed through her fingers and she staggered back against the wall. Then she fell. Suddenly, the front door opened and Travis, who didn't have the bottom half of his face masked, stuck his head in.
Come on, quick! Folks heard that shot! We gotta get out of here!
Open the damn safe!
I told you, I can't.
I don't believe you!
There's folks coming toward the bank! We gotta go now!
Come on, let's get out of here!
With the sack of money he'd taken from the teller's tray, Parnell vaulted back over the teller's counter. Hearing the two gunshots, Cal ran out of the mercantile store with his pistol in his hand. He saw the men run out of the bank and leap onto their horses. Someone across the street from the bank fired at the five riders with a shotgun. The charge of double-aught buckshot missed the robbers, but it did hit the front window of the bank. One of the robbers shot back at the man with the shotgun. The five robbers galloped down the street away from Cal. Cal shot at him and saw one of the riders tumble from the saddle. None of the other four paid any attention to the one who went down. Cal fired a second time, but they were out of range, and his shot did nothing but help chase them on as they sped out of town. The route out of town took the outlaws right by the sheriff's office. At the far end of the street, a man stepped off the boardwalk and into the street. A flash of sunlight revealed the star fastened to his vest.
It's the sheriff!
Out of town, the four men pushed their horses hard to put as much distance between them and the town as they could.
Is anyone coming after us?
Travis, who was bringing up the rear, looked over his shoulder at the receding town. He saw no riders,
No, they ain't no one mounted. Except for Putnam, we got away clean. We got away clean.
Cal ran into the bank with his pistol drawn. The bank teller raised a shotgun to his shoulder and aimed at Cal.
Mr. Martin, no, he's with me.
Martin lowered the shotgun. Distracted by the shotgun, Cal had not seen Sally. Looking over toward the wall now, he saw her and the bank owner lying on the floor.
Miss Sally!
Oh, how is Mr. Flowers?
Cal looked toward Flowers and saw that he was dead. But before he could respond to Sally, she passed out.
We need a doctor! Is there a doctor in this town?
Yes, his office is down the street just over the hardware store.
Cal didn't have to go all the way down to the doctor's office. The doctor was across the street looking at the man who had fired the shotgun.
Doctor, quick! Doctor! There's a woman in the bank who's been shot and is still alive. She's in the bank on the floor. The owner of the bank, he's there too, but he's dead.
When Cal and the doctor stepped into the bank, Tamara was on her knees beside Sally. Tamara had taken off her petticoat and was holding it in a wad over the wound. The petticoat was already soaked with blood.
Very good, Mrs. McKenzie. You're doing exactly the right thing by stopping the bleeding like that. Yeah, let me look at the wound.
The doctor removed the blood-soaked petticoat and looked at the wound. The blood coming from the bullet hole was very dark in color, and it was coming out in a slow but steady flow.
Good. The bleeding is venous instead of arterial. The bullet is still inside. It's gonna have to come out.
Is she gonna live, Doc?
I don't know. We need to get her to my office.
Cal took Sally's still unconscious form into the office and laid her on the examination table. Dr. Gunther took two clean sheets and a pair of scissors from a cabinet.
Mrs. McKenzie, I want you to strip her naked. You will probably have to cut her clothes off. Then place these two sheets over her, one across the top of her body and one across the bottom. But leave the wound exposed so I can examine it.
You're going to take all her clothes off?
I have to. But these bed sheets will preserve her modesty.
I ain't gonna watch this.
I don't intend for you to. You and I will wait over there until it is done. Mrs. McKenzie, please do it as quickly as you can.
What am I gonna tell Smoke?
Smoke?
Smoke Jensen. He's Sally's husband.
Oh, Lord. I've never met Mr. Smoke Jensen, but I have certainly heard of him. And this is his wife, you say?
Yes, sir. You gotta keep her alive, Doctor. I come over here with her. I'm responsible for her. I should have gone to that bank with her, but instead I was all the way down the other end of the street in the store buying a stick of candy. No, I should have been in the bank with her.
What is your name?
It's Cal. Calvin Woods. I work for Smoke and Miss Sally back at the Sugarloaf.
Well, look at it this way, Cal. If you had been in there, you might have been killed as well. Then for sure you could have done nothing for her.
Dr. Gunther, she is ready.
Cal and Dr. Gunther returned to the table. Sally was lying on her back, her eyes closed, her head turned to one side. A bed sheet covered her shoulders and breasts. A second bed sheet covered her legs and lower abdomen. There was only about a 6-inch area of her belly exposed. The bullet wound, an ugly black hole, was about 1.5 inches to the left and on line with her belly button. Dr. Gunther used warm salt water to wash away the blood, so only the dark red, almost black hole marred the smooth white skin.
What are you doing?
If the bullet hit any of the vital organs inside, I should be able to smell it. That's good.
What did you smell?
Nothing. That's why I say it's good.
Gunther took a clean cloth from a cupboard, poured a bit of chloroform onto it, and handed the cloth to Tamara.
I'm going to have to probe for the bullet. If she awakens during the procedure, hold this over her nose and mouth for a count of three. Only until the count of three, mind you. Then take it away. Holding it there any longer could be dangerous.
All right.
For the next step in the procedure, Dr. Gunther used a Nailaton probe, which was a long probe with a tiny porcelain bulb on the end. After first pouring alcohol over the end of the probe, he stuck it into the wound, then followed the trajectory of the bullet until he hit something hard.
I found something.
The bullet?
Neither the bullet or bone. We'll know in just a minute.
Gunther withdrew the nailaton probe and examined the porcelain tip.
Yes, there it is.
He pointed to a little gray smudge on the tip.
You see that? That's lead from the bullet.
After having found the bullet, he picked up a pair of long-legged forceps and pushed them into the wound.
Oh. The chloroform. Oh.
Tamara applied the chloroform cloth to Sally's nose and mouth, and she counted to three. When she pulled it away, Sally was unconscious again.
Good.
Dr. Gunther pushed the forceps into the wound until he encountered the bullet. Moving slowly and delicately, he probed around. Then he pulled the bullet out and dropped it into a pan of water that was sitting near the operating table. Gunther walked over to a glass front cabinet, opened the door, then took out a small brown bottle.
I'm glad she's still unconscious.
Why's that?
I need to disinfect the wound. This is iodine, and it'll burn like the blazes.
After pouring iodine on the wound, he took strips of gauze bandage and wrapped them around her.
What happens now?
I'll keep her here overnight. Then we need to find a place for her to go while she recuperates.
Can I take her back home?
No, I'm afraid not. The trip would be far too dangerous for her.
She can stay with me, Doctor.
That would be good. You could keep an eye on her, and I can check in several times a day.
Doc, I need to send a telegram to Smoke. What should I tell him?
Tell him that Mrs. Jensen was seriously wounded, but that the outlook is hopeful.
Smoke and Pearly were on the Sugarloaf performing the duties of spring roundup when Smoke looked out into the distance.
That's young Eb Kyle, isn't it? Delivers telegrams for Will Winstead.
I believe it is. He must be looking for directions.
Smoke started toward Kyle, the smile still on his face. But when he saw the expression on Kyle's face, he felt a quick twinge of worry, and the smile disappeared.
Kyle, what is it? Do you have a telegram for me?
Yes, sir. Mr. Jensen, I'm afraid I do. And I'm terrible sorry to be the one what has to deliver it.
Give it to me.
Smoke tore open the envelope, then removed the telegram.
Miss Sally has been shot. She is awful bad hurt, but doctor says there is hope. Kyle.
Smoke, what is it?
Smoke handed the telegram to Pearly and looked at Kyle.
When did you receive this?
It took me just under a half hour to ride out here. Mr. Winstead, he gave it to me just as quick as it come in, and he wrote it down.
Pearly, fill my canteen. Bring me my pistol and my hat.
We're going over there?
Not we. I'm going. We're still in the middle of a roundup. I need you to stay here and watch after things.
Smoke, come on. I can't just sit here wondering what's going on.
You aren't going to have to wonder. I'll keep you posted. I'll send you a telegram every day.
You promise?
I promise. Now get my gear together while I'm saddling my horse. Oh, and give Kyle a dollar.
Wait there, Kyle.
I will. Thank you. I'm awful sorry I'm the one who had to bring this message.
It took Smoke just over 2 hours to make the ride, which was about as fast as he could go without crippling his horse. As he rode into town, he saw a man's body in an open coffin standing up in front of the feed and seed store. A sign was propped against him. Killed in a bank robbery. Do you know this man? So, there was a bank robbery. That had to be how Sally was hurt. But how did she get involved?
Smoke!
Looking toward the hardware store, Smoke saw Cal come running toward him.
Oh, I knew you'd come. I've been keeping an eye out for you ever since I sent the telegram.
How is she?
It ain't good.
Damn it, Cal. Is she alive?
Oh, yeah, she's alive. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to scare you none.
Where is she?
She's over here.
She's in a hardware store?
What? Oh, no. No, I mean, she's in the doctor's office. His office is just over the hardware store. Get to it by going up the steps on the side of the building there.
Cal didn't finish his sentence because Smoke slapped his legs against the side of his horse, galloping the final 50 yards. Smoke jerked the door open, then pushed inside without knocking. He saw Sally on the table, and the doctor and Tamara Gooding standing alongside, looking down at her.
Hey, what do you mean barging in here like this?
He's Sally's husband.
I'm Smoke Jensen. Sorry about breaking in like that.
No, that's quite all right, Mr. Jensen. I'm sorry I spoke so harshly.
How is she?
I won't lie to you, Mr. Jensen. She was shot through the lower abdomen, and the wound is quite serious.
Is the bullet still inside?
No, I got it out. As far as I can tell, it didn't hit any of her vitals.
Can I talk to her?
She's been in and out of consciousness ever since she was shot. Even when she is conscious, she isn't very communicative. I'm sorry.
Doctor, give it to me straight. Is she going to live?
I wish I could tell you with 100% assurance that she's going to live. Unfortunately, I can't promise you that. After I removed the bullet, I irrigated the abdomen with a saline solution until all the effluent was clear. Then I made a generous use of an antiseptic, in this case, iodine. If I were making a bet, I would say her chances are better than 50-50 that she's going to live.
50-50? You can't do any better than that.
I'm sorry. I want to give you and Mrs. Jensen hope. I believe hope is an important part of the healing process. But I don't want to give you false hope.
How many people have you seen who are gut-shot and survive?
Quite a few. Those that die generally do so because of pathogenic infection or a condition of shock.
She's a fighter, Smoke. You know that better than anyone. I'm betting if there's any chance at all, Miss Sally's gonna come through this.
Smoke had not heard Cal come up behind him, but he wasn't surprised to see his young friend at hand. Smoke nodded his head.
You got that right, Cal. If ever there was a fighter, it would be Sally. So what do we do now? Can I take her home? I'll hire the finest coach I can find.
No, not yet. Mrs. McKenzie has agreed to let your wife stay with her until it is safe enough for her to travel. In the meantime, she will be much better off here.
Thank you for agreeing to look after her.
Oh, don't be silly, Smoke. Sally is a very dear friend. Of course I will look after her. Oh, just a minute. I have something for you.
Tamara walked over to her handbag, opened it, and took out a packet of money.
This is the $2,000 Sally was going to invest in my restaurant.
You still plan to build the restaurant, don't you?
Yes.
Then keep the money. That's why Sally came over here in the first place.
I know. And I feel so guilty about that. If she hadn't come over to see me, she wouldn't have been in the bank to get shot.
These things happen. Don't blame yourself. You had nothing to do with what happened.
I tell myself that, but I'm having a hard time convincing myself.
Put it out of your mind. If I'm going to stay here for a while, I need to find a place to spend the night here in town.
I'm staying over at the hotel. Come on with me. I know there are some empty rooms over there.
I don't want to leave.
Trust me, Mr. Jensen. Right now, she doesn't even know you're here. You'll do neither yourself nor her any good by staying here. When she comes to, and if she is communicative, I will come get you.
By the way, Doc, you needn't worry none about that outlaw that got shot. He's dead. They got him propped up in the coffin down at the feed store.
Oh, I'm sorry to say I'd forgotten all about him. Was he killed instantly?
He probably was. But the truth is, I would have told you that anyway just to make sure you was taking care of Miss Sally.
I would not have abandoned Mrs. Jensen to tend to the outlaw. But I am a doctor, and honor bound to treat everyone. Even those we might consider undesirable.
Yes, sir, I understand. When I shot that son of a bitch, I hit him right in the back of the head. Not that I'm all that good of a shot, mind you. Just so happens that that's where I hit him.
As I say, I'm a doctor, but I also have a strong sense of justice. Those people killed three of our citizens and wounded Mrs. Jensen. I feel no sense of remorse that one of the outlaws was killed in the process.
Twenty miles west by northwest of Gothic, Dinkins and the others stopped in the shadow of Purple Peak Mountain, which was significant. When they rode out of Gothic, they were going east, and they rode in a great circle. It was late afternoon by the time they actually reached the mountain.
Parnell, climb up a ways and make certain there ain't no one following us. If you don't see anyone, we'll stay here for the night.
We got anything to eat? I'm hungry.
Got some bacon and hardtack. And coffee.
Ain't all that much of a meal, but it's better than nothing.
Parnell climbed about 300 feet up the side of the mountain, and he looked back along the trail over which they had just come. Then he came back down to report to the others.
I could see 10 miles or more back. I didn't see nobody.
Like as not, there won't be nobody coming after us. I'm pretty sure we killed the sheriff as we was leaving town, so there wouldn't be nobody to organize a posse.
Yeah, and even if they did put one together like as not, they'd be looking for us going east.
Anybody see what happened to Putnam?
He was riding alongside me. One minute he was there, and the next minute he wasn't. I reckon he got shot.
You and him was pards, weren't you?
I never knowed him till I met him in prison. We was pards in there, as much as you can be pards in prison.
How much money do we get?
I don't know. Whatever it is, we would have got a lot more if we had been able to get into the safe.
You reckon they was telling the truth? You reckon there really is such a thing as a time lock? I ain't never heard of such a thing before.
I heard folks talking about it in prison. But this here's the first time I ever run into one.
As the others were discussing the time lock, Dinkins emptied the bag of cash they had managed to get from the cashier's drawer.
How much?
$211.
Dinkins gave $50 to the other three and kept $61 for himself.
Well, that ain't much for what we went through. Hell, me and Frank got damn near that much money just robbing a store.
We didn't go through nothing, except for Putnam, who was killed. Wasn't none of us hit, and there ain't nobody chasing us.
Travis started gathering some firewood, and a few minutes later, they had a fire going. They fried bacon, then cooked 4 pieces of hardtack in the bacon grease. They also made a pot of coffee.
So what do we do next?
I know what I'm going to do next. I think me and Travis will find us another store. There ain't as many shooting at you when you rob a store as when you rob a bank. And you wind up with damn near as much money.
I didn't know this bank had a time lock. I'll make sure with the next one.
The next one? You planning on robbing another bank?
Why not? We've got our gang together, don't we?
Yeah, but we lost one.
We'll get another man.
Where?
Don't worry, I've already asked him to join us.
You know him? Can we trust him?
And can he hold up his end?
Yeah, I know him. We can trust him, and he can hold up his end.
Smoke remained in the doctor's office for the rest of the day, hoping Sally would regain consciousness. She did wake up a few times, but was so groggy she was incommunicative, just as Dr. Gunther said she would be. Finally, as darkness fell, Smoke checked in at the Silver Lode Hotel, then went to the Silver Nugget Saloon. He and Cal took a beer to a table in the back. There was a buzz of excitement and anger in the saloon. Cal had never seen Smoke this distraught.
You know about Nicole, don't you?
Yeah, I know about her. She was your first wife, and I know she was murdered.
I can't let that happen again, Cal. God help me, it just can't happen again.
The thought of this strong man, the strongest man he had ever known, the man he respected and admired more than any other, being in such a state of despair, frightened Cal. He put his hand on Smoke's shoulder.
Smoke, I probably wouldn't even be alive if it hadn't been for Miss Sally. You know that better than anybody. Here I was, a dumb kid. I actually tried to hold her up instead of shooting me like she could have, or turning me in over to the law like she should have. She took me out to the Sugar Loaf, fed me the first goddamn good meal I had in weeks, and offered me a home. I'm telling you right now that I know as sure as God made little green apples, Miss Sally's gonna pull through this. I know she is.
I know it too, Cal.
Cal nodded, pleased that his declaration seemed to have made some inroad into Smoke's melancholy.
Tell me about the people who did this.
Well, sir, like you seen, one of them is dead. I shot him as they was riding out of town. I fired a second time, but they was way too far away to tell the truth. I was damn lucky to hit the first one.
Do we know who they are?
Mr. Martin, the bank teller, and Mrs. McKenzie heard some of the names as they was talking to each other. The leader was someone named Dinkins. There's also someone named Parnell. Yeah, that's all we know.
Hey, we just found out who the dead bank robber is.
Who?
His name is John Putnam. He just got out of prison no more than a month ago.
How do you know this?
Sheriff Carson come into town and recognized him.
Monty's here?
I guess so from the way that fella was talking, but I ain't seen him yet.
Let's see if we can find him.
Where do you think he might be?
My guess would be the sheriff's office. Seeing as the local sheriff was one of the ones killed, I expect Monty to set up a temporary office there.
When they went into the sheriff's office, they saw Sheriff Carson standing behind a desk, looking at an array of wanted posters which were spread out before him. Standing beside Sheriff Carson was the man who had been deputy for Tyson.
Hello, Monty.
How's Sally?
Not good, but she's still alive and fighting.
Do you know Thad Malcolm? He was Sheriff Tyson's deputy. Thad, this is Smoke Jensen.
We've never met, but I've heard a lot about you. All good. I'm awful sorry about your wife, Mr. Jensen. I sure hope she pulls through all right.
Thank you, Deputy Malcolm.
Smoke, I've identified 3 of the people who did this.
Sheriff Carson pointed to the posters on his desk.
John Putnam. He's the one that you killed, Cal. This is Cole Parnell. Putnam and Parnell were serving time together in the state prison at Cannon City. They were both released last month.
Sheriff Carson picked up another wanted poster, and he showed it to Smoke.
This august gentleman, and believe me, I use that term in the most contemptuous way, is one William Dinkins. According to Mr. Martin and Mrs. McKenzie, Dinkins is the one who killed Mr. Flowers and shot Sally. But shooting unarmed people in a bank isn't something new to him. 2 months ago, he killed a teller in a botched bank holdup in Buffalo. Last year, Dinkins led a gang of outlaws who robbed the Tucumcari, New Mexico bank, and he shot a 12-year-old boy who was holding his hands in the air. Oh, he's a real prince of a fellow.
I'm going to get him, Monty. He shot my wife. And whether Sally lives or dies, I'm going to get Dinkins.
Just then, Dr. Gunther stepped into the sheriff's office.
Excuse me, Sheriff? Smoke?
Yes, Doc.
Mrs. Jensen is awake and is asking about you.
Smoke ran down the street to the doctor's office. He hurried to Sally's side.
I thought I taught you to duck.
Smoke, what are you doing here?
What am I doing here? Did you think I would stay at the ranch once I learned you'd been shot?
I've been shot?
You don't remember?
Oh, yes. I'd nearly forgotten that.
You're quite a woman, Sally. You can be shot and nearly forget it.
Oh, the $2,000. I threw it. I don't know what happened to it.
Tamara has it.
Oh, I'm glad.
Smoke raised Sally's hands to his lips and kissed it.
Oh, is that the best you can do? That's the way you greet some old lady at a party.
I don't want to do anything that'll hurt you.
I'm not made out of glass.
Smiling, Smoke leaned over to kiss her on her forehead. But when she pursed her lips, he knew she wanted a real kiss, so he obliged her.
Maybe if the other folks would leave, I could climb up on the table beside you.
Oh, Sally,
I'm sorry.
Oh, don't be ridiculous. That was a perfectly outrageous thing for you to say, and I wouldn't have it any other way.